Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the problem with PBMs, how pharmacy benefit managers went from holding drug costs in check to the reason prices are out of control, and what can be done about it. Also this morning, earlier this month, the U.S. Treasury quietly staged a yen-tervention in an effort to stabilize the Japanese currency. We'll tell you what was done and why it matters. And it will be a special evening tomorrow as Arlington High School opens their football season at the new Doncaster Field at Joe Metzger Stadium, a fitting tribute to a Red Devil legend. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, August 20th, 2026. This was big news yesterday. An experimental vaccine treatment that is showing signs of preventing recurring cancer or preventing cancer from spreading in a study of high-risk melanoma patients. The pharmaceutical giants Moderna and Merck released these findings yesterday. Interim results from this clinical trial show the vaccine used in combination with Merck's cancer immunotherapy Keytruda appeared to extend the time before cancer returned in those patients and stave off recurring cancer with this treatment. And this brings up, well, a couple of things. Number one, if there was a vaccine, I know there's so much vaccine skepticism out there right now. And so many people are anti-vax these days. But if there was a vaccine that could prevent cancer, I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, I'm not going to take the vaccine to prevent the chickenpox, or I'm not going to get the flu shot, or whatever it might happen, or the COVID shot, whatever it might happen to be. But if there was a vaccine to prevent cancer, now we're talking about a whole different animal. In any event, The companies behind this trial, Moderna and Merck, have not published the results or released the new data, saying it will be presented at an upcoming medical meeting and shared with regulators. But this was huge news, possibility of a vaccine to prevent recurring cancer in high-risk melanoma patients. And so here's the other thing. For anyone who claims that Big Pharma doesn't really want a cure for cancer. That's the other thing you hear all the time. Oh, the drug companies, they don't want a cure for cancer because they make all this money on cancer drugs. Well, if you're thinking that they don't want to cure cancer because it would mean fewer profits, you should know that Moderna's stock yesterday rose over 170%. Over 170%. Percent after this news came out. 170% plus. So make no mistake, there is big money in curing cancer too, you know? Anyway, big news yesterday. Elsewhere, speaking of medical related items, this of a much less critical issue, but no less important to many people. August is National Hair Loss Awareness Month. We go from cancer to hair loss. One of these things is not like the other, but, you know, a lot of people, hair loss is a big deal. Dermatologist Dr. Shayana Ranasinghe, I think is how you pronounce it, with the Cleveland Clinic, is urging caution when looking at supplements claiming to help with hair growth. And if this is something that is of a concern to you, you have probably seen these things, these ads for these supplements pop up in your social media feed and online and all of that with targeted advertising. I have not seen because to me, it's no big deal. But for some people, it is a big deal. And if you've seen these things pop up, these ads for these supplements that claim to help with hair growth, she says, use caution because many of them are not, many if not most of them, are not FDA approved and could interact poorly with any other medications you may be taking. Dr. Ranasinghe recommends topical minoxidil, which is the only FDA-approved over-the-counter medication clinically proven to regrow hair. And even so, the results are kind of hit and miss, but that is the only one that has been actually FDA-approved. Everything else, I want to steer clear from, or at the very least, approach with caution. She says it is best to get a diagnosis from an actual dermatologist before experimenting with different products. So, something to keep in mind because those ads are out there. A couple of other items here. Among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This sent environmental advocates into a tizzy yesterday when word came out that the Trump administration plans to remove federal protections from over 44 million acres of national forest land. On Tuesday, actually, this came out, late Tuesday, and so it was all over social media, the environmentalists up in arms. The U.S. Forest Service says it wants to rescind the Roadless Area Conservation Rule from 2001. Wants to rescind it in its entirety. The rule established during the Clinton era prohibits logging and new road construction in national forest lands that are currently undeveloped. Wants to preserve those undeveloped areas. But Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins called the restrictions outdated and saying removing them would reduce the risk of wildfires. Okay, that's the claim. That's the argument. Environmental groups, though, say the rule is the only thing that protects national forest land from industrial development. So, expect a battle over this. The 2001 Roadless Area Conservation Rule. I didn't even know there was such a rule, but there you go. Let's see. This is good news. Back to the medical file here this morning. Medical related stuff. And this is perfect for coffee drinkers. You're waking up this morning, having that first cup of Joe, trying to, get things going with your wake up juice. A new study shows coffee drinkers are being associated with healthier body composition. Healthier body composition for those who drink coffee. Researchers at the University of Oulu. It's a university in Finland. Okay, so you can call it whatever you like. I don't know how to pronounce the name. Oulu. Oulu. Anyway, these Finnish researchers say those who drank more coffee, for the most part, had lower levels of body fat and greater skeletal muscle mass. There you go. If you need permission to drink that coffee, to have another cup of coffee, here you go. The study looked at more than 2,200 people who were 46 years old with similar body mass index, and researchers say the results could push further studies to determine whether coffee itself caused any of the biological differences or if there was something else at play. But for now, let's just call it the coffee and be done. We'll call it the coffee and we'll be happy. We don't have to worry about having an extra cup of coffee. We can do that with a clear conscience. And how about this? As you head off to work this morning or school or wherever it is that you're heading off to this morning, something to keep in mind. A new Harvard study found a 15% increase in U.S. traffic fatalities on days when major music albums drop on streaming platforms. Got the major debut of a big, highly anticipated music album, and it causes traffic fatalities to jump. Why would that be, you ask? Well, researchers examined the 10 most streamed first day Spotify releases of albums by Taylor Swift, Drake, Bad Bunny, Kendrick Lamar, Harry Styles, Kanye West, all big artists. And they looked at the first day releases of those albums from 2017 to 2022, analyzing 233,000 traffic deaths. And they found an average of 139.1 crash fatalities on release days versus 120.9 on the surrounding days. So it jumped up by a little more than 18 deaths on the road on the days this new music dropped. And Harvard researcher Dr. Vishal Patel says the spike appeared mostly among drivers who were alone in the car and was more pronounced among sober drivers. So it wasn't inebriation. It wasn't distraction from somebody else in the vehicle. They are theorizing that people are fiddling around with their phones, listening to this new music, and that is what's distracting them. Researchers acknowledge that the data cannot confirm this kind of distraction as a direct cause, but there seems to be, if nothing else, a strong correlation. So on those days when your favorite artist drops new music, be careful behind the wheel. I would even go further and say, on those days when new music is dropped, even if you're not a fan of, say, Taylor Swift, on the day when she releases a new album, look out for the other guy on the road, because chances are good somebody is trying to find that new Taylor Swift music and probably paying less attention to everything else on the road than they should. Just a public service message there. Interesting stuff, no doubt. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories there to get your Thursday morning started.
Ohio News Now. Drivers at Findlay should expect a closure along State Road 567. Beginning today, the road will be closed between County Road 236 and 237 from 7 a.m. until 5 p.m. daily as crews work on the Greenway Trail Boardwalk. The project expected to continue through August 28th. The YMCA has closed Riverside Pool for the remainder of the 2026 season. The closure is effective immediately because of emergency repairs. YMCA officials say the pool cannot safely remain open, and the work will be completed with the goal of reopening next season. Vice President J.D. Vance is heading back to his hometown later this week. Vance scheduled a visit Middletown on Friday, where he's expected to discuss the Trump administration's economic policies during an appearance at the Cleveland Cliffs Middletown Works facility. That is the largest supplier of flat-rolled steel in North America. $1 million gift from Marathon Petroleum is helping the University of Findlay expand into one of the fastest growing areas of business education. The university is creating a new business analytics program. Beginning this academic year, the Marathon funding will help pay for a professorship, scholarships, computer equipment, and opportunities for students to attend business analytics conferences and competitions. Students will learn how to turn raw data into useful business information using platforms including Tableau, BI, Python, and Excel. Findlay also plans to offer a business analytics certificate aimed at working professionals looking to add those skills during their careers. I'm Patrick Johnson reporting.
Well, of all the issues that plague the complex and convoluted American healthcare system, perhaps the most frustrating is the role of pharmacy benefit managers who handle prescription drug benefits for health insurance plans, large employers, and government programs like Medicare. The idea dates back to the 1960s and was supposed to help keep costs in check. But all too often, they end up artificially keeping drug prices high to drive their own profits at the cost of patients. Antonio Chachi is a former leader of government affairs for the Ohio Pharmacists Association and the president of 3-Axis Advisors. Antonio, this is really a classic case of the road to hell being paved with good intentions, right? How did we get from this is something that will help control costs to this is the reason drug prices are out of control?
Excellent framing. And yeah, I mean, look, the nobody listening to this will be surprised to hear that drug companies set really high prices for drugs, and they sell those drugs to wholesalers who set high prices for drugs, and they sell those drugs to pharmacies who also set their own high prices for drugs. And so the question is everybody's overcharging for medicines with their sticker prices, how the heck do we afford them all? Well, we rely on very well-positioned pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs, to act as the bully for the bully, to act as a counterweight in an environment of bogus and inflated drug prices. So what on earth could be the problem if we have large Fortune 15 companies? PBMs are now larger than the drug companies and pharmacy companies they were hired to control. So if they're big and they're bad and they got lots of muscle against the other folks in the drug chain that want to overcharge, what could be wrong? Well, the PBMs also have their hands in the proverbial cookie jar. And over time, what started as very lean, mean pharmacy claims processing machines became multi-billion dollar industries that actually started to cross the line and make money off the very transactions they were hired to control.
You cite a recently released report where, as an example, a specific cancer drug that can cost less than $100 simultaneously carries a price tag elsewhere of more than $12,000. I get that there is going to be some price variance, sometimes a significant price variance, but that is alarming.
Without question. Look, when I learned about this weird world of drug pricing years ago, it was here in Ohio, where pharmacists across the country were complaining about underpayments in the Ohio Medicaid program. On the other end of the transaction, Ohio Medicaid was spending more for medicines than they ever had before. So those two things didn't add up. How can costs be going down while simultaneously be going up? Well, our work looking at publicly available data helped lead investigators at the Columbus Dispatch and eventually the state auditor's office to uncover $245 million of hidden markups where PBMs were paying pharmacies low and billing high and pocketing the difference in a practice called spread pricing. Ohio eventually outlawed that practice, meaning that the fluff or the hidden markups were supposed to go away. But after the implementation of that policy, we found several medicines that remained inflated, and they were mostly specialty drugs, cancer medicines or multiple sclerosis medicines that still maintained this ridiculous upcharge. What we learned about those products was that they just so happened to be drugs that PBMs were steering to their own specialty pharmacies. So PBMs are not standalone entities anymore. They are part of the largest companies in the world. United Healthcare, CVS Health, Cigna, Express Scripts. These are Fortune 15 companies, and they aren't just insurance companies. They aren't just PBMs. They also now own the pharmacies where they get to pay themselves or their own affiliate companies whatever they want. So surprise, surprise, in a world of publicly traded companies whose fiduciary obligations are to shareholders, they're going to be in the business of making more money. So the drugs that remain the most inflated in price tend to be the ones where the biggest conflicts of interest exist.
So to be clear, is that an extreme example or just one of many? I mean, how pervasive are these incredibly wide variances?
It is one of a cluster of extreme examples. One thing to know about the drug channel, and this isn't just a PBM issue, this is an everybody issue. You don't make big money on everything. In fact, many things are very inefficient or underprofitable. But a lot of profits are concentrated on a very small number of prescriptions. We did an analysis a couple of years ago where we found that from a pharmacy perspective, over 60% of overall profits are generated on just 5% of claims. What that means is that success or failure from a business perspective in the drug business is going to be largely dependent upon a very small number of drugs. So while, yes, it is an extreme example, the extreme examples are what drive overall profitability.
You're much more well-versed on this than I am, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, if I've got one PBM for one company that's negotiating the price of a drug down to the point where I'm selling it at a loss to this company, then I'm going to have to mark it up, selling it to a different company or in a different plan in order to balance that out.
You've nailed it. The difference is that if I'm selling the drug, I don't get to control when I get overpaid or underpaid. So let's pretend I'm a pharmacy, right? If the PBM is going to underpay me for a majority of prescriptions, well, if they're underpaying me, I'm going to go out of business.
Right.
If I'm heavily reliant upon some overly profitable prescriptions, that ultimately will make the overall math work. What we've seen is that if you're a pharmacy and you deploy what I'll call a reasonable approach to pricing, or you take a more sober look at the way that you price your drugs, mm-hmm. what happens is you still get stuck with all the losses, but then you get none of the benefits of the windfalls that balance the books. So the most pharmacies that have the lowest prices just so happen to be the ones that don't take insurance at all.
So in other words, the pharmacy benefit managers are at the same time lining their own pockets and also working a little bit too well on some other thing and costing other people money indirectly.
Correct. I mean, I've referred to PBMs as both the arsonists and firefighters of high drug prices.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is no disputing the fact that they are saving big money off the inflated prices charged by everybody else in the drug supply chain. The question is the degree with which those savings are passed through to the end payer and whether or not the conflicts of interest where a PBM gets to set the price of a drug that is dispensed by its own pharmacy and set the price of a drug that is dispensed by the pharmacies that compete with those pharmacies they own.
Yeah.
Those are the things that start making the problems get significantly worse than they were when they started.
Now, you mentioned that the state of Ohio tried to take some steps to address this, but it didn't necessarily work out the way it was intended. So is there anything that can be done? What is being done? What can be done that would ultimately bring down drug pricing and provide some relief for consumers and insurers? I mean, this is not only affecting us out of the price that we pay for our medications, but the price that we pay for our insurance coverage as well, right?
Absolutely. Look, I've studied policy at the state and federal level for years, and it's a proverbial game of whack-a-mole. Ohio said to PBMs, you can't do spread pricing. You can't pay the pharmacy one price and bill us a different price and not tell us the difference. PBM said that they were going to comply with the law. They did on paper, didn't in spirit. And so after a whole couple of years of cat and mouse between the Columbus Dispatch, the Ohio Medicaid program, the Ohio Attorney General's office, and the marketplace, Ohio finally said, we're scrapping this. And Governor DeWine pulled the plug and fired the PBMs and moved to a set transparent model where the entity that was setting the prices of drugs for Medicaid no longer had a conflict of interest of making money below the line, where essentially their own pharmacies could benefit from the pricing decisions that they made. That doesn't mean that you need to just get rid of PBMs, because if you get rid of them, who's going to be there to negotiate off the high prices of medicines?
Right.
So the true solution is pop the bubble, right? I shouldn't need a PBM to make hundreds of dollars on a claim for a drug that should only cost $10, $15, $20. So if we had the right incentives in the drug channel so that pharmacies and manufacturers competed by lowering prices, that would decrease our reliance on a middleman to take a big markup in the middle of that transaction. And you can see that in the cash pay pharmacies that are out there in the United States, where if you walk into a traditional pharmacy, whether it's an independent or a large chain pharmacy, if they serve insurance, you'll see ridiculous bloated sticker prices. But if you go to a cash pay pharmacy, whether that be in Ohio, there's a pharmacy called Freedom Pharmacy. And then I mentioned before, Mark Cuban Cost Plus Drug Company. These are independent. They don't live in the insurance-based system, which means the prices they set are intended to be attractive to our wallets and purses as consumers.
So why aren't those more widespread? It seems like that would be a business model that one would like to emulate. So why aren't they more widespread?
Largely because we keep walking through the door of our insurance company to procure all our medicines. We assume as though that they will always give us the best deal. Mm. And again, as I said, they will find big savings off inflated sticker prices. But what if you didn't have inflated sticker prices in the first place?
It is incredibly complicated. A lot going on, obviously, behind the scenes. But as that curtain is pulled away, we start to see that there are potential solutions. Antonio Chachi is, as we mentioned, former leader of government affairs for the Ohio Farmers Association, president of Three Axis Advisors. Antonio, thanks very much for joining us and sharing your insight on this fascinating topic. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Well, earlier this month, while we were all paying attention to the price we're paying at the pump because of all of the turmoil between the U.S. and Iran, something very interesting was happening in the currency market. Joining us this morning is Titus Allen from AK Wealth Management to explain why it matters. And Titus, before we get to this yen-tervention that we're referring to, let me ask you to talk a little bit about what's going on in the Strait of Hormuz here, because that's, again, where everybody is kind of focused. It's open, it's closed, it's controlled by the U.S., it's controlled by Iran. Seems like every day it is a different narrative, and even commodities investors, it seems, don't really know what's going to happen next, because this has been like a roller coaster ride for oil prices. What do you make of all of this?
That is a money manager's nightmare since March, right? We have a deal, we do, we don't, we do, we don't. And that would have different consequences on positioning. But I would say there's two things going on there. Everybody's focused, obviously, on the oil prices, which is tied into inflation. And, you know, why does that matter? Well, talking about currency, Warsh is still driving the bus. So Warsh is the Fed chairman. He came in, I think, on May 22nd.
Right.
And not wanting to look like a puppet of Trump, in my opinion, talk tough on inflation. So he did two things. He created five committees to, in my opinion, redefine what inflation is. I think that'll be the outcome of that, because most people haven't noticed, but in CPI, healthcare is actually very, very cheap, how they define it. But when I talk to my business owners, we have a very different experience.
Sure.
I would expect more of the same, redefine it and inflate, because that is the only option we have, as we have $4 trillion that has to be refinanced this year and next. So this year, as we've been trying to refinance debt for the U.S., we've stayed away from the mid and long part of the curve because there wasn't enough demand. And so we basically printed some short paper to buy longer term debt to lower those rates. This is important because, amazingly, we also did this. It looks like, now this hasn't come out, but it sure looks like to me like we stepped into Japan's market again. We both got the bump at the same time. And the reason why Japan matters is, and I'll try and put a bow on this, is they, people, whether you're in the Strait of Hormuz or you're Japan, you sell what you can, not what you should. And so if you're a country that relies on getting oil through Hormuz, and suddenly you can't do that, then you have to sell something that has a deep enough market to fund your country. So yeah. Turkey did a 60-ton gold sell, and they followed up with 40. Japan is selling treasuries, and everybody's selling these, because these markets are deep enough to handle those types of sells.
Mm-hmm.
So what's been happening with Japan is, as the, and this is really important, as the yen has weakened, we have stepped in, and they have to sell treasuries to bolster the yen. Well, that's putting pressure where? On our yield curve. So the yen carry trade, which we've been talking about, we might even talk about that last time we were talking, is that you have to understand that for most of my life, interest rates in Japan have been zero. So every major hedge fund and pension fund would go borrow money at zero. And then even if you bought a treasury, you got a 4 or 5% spread and you're brilliant. Well, what is obvious is that they weren't buying treasuries. They were buying things like NVIDIA. So while I don't expect anybody to follow, you know, the South Korean market, what I would say is there is a very, very high correlation between yen intervention, where we, again, spent $10 billion of selling UK money to buy the yen to strengthen it. But what's interesting is that is holding up the AI trade. So, you know, the Kospi bounced its biggest bounce right there. If you track, you know, things like the tech market, it's highly correlated to the yen. And so if people can understand, you can't just print money and have there not be any consequences. We've been saying for a long time that the irony of pumping the system full of liquidity is eventually you get a liquidity crisis. Well, guess what? It sure looks like that's where we're at.
Leads us into and kind of ties it all together with this yentervention, where the U.S. Treasury earlier this month joined Japan in this joint venture to stabilize that currency, and kind of explains why this is significant. And don't roast me on this, but because it may be a dumb question, but why do we care? What is the impact here in the U.S. if the yen is at a 40-year low as it was before? I guess my question is this something, you know, stabilizing the yen, will this benefit anyone other than the rich investors, or will it cost the rest of us if it's not stabilized?
So I think we're getting very close to the everything trade. It's all one trade now. And so when people come in, they don't understand. They might have 7 or 8 different funds, and they're basically all the same thing. The S&P right now, 7 stocks, the Mag 7 are getting close to 40% of the S&P. And the last time we had that high of a position, it was right before the Depression. I'm not saying we're going into the Depression, but to answer your question, we have, in my estimation, trillions of dollars in the yen carry trade. So what is happening is when these financial engineers brilliantly go borrow money at zero and go buy NVIDIA, well, as the yen weakens and the interest rates go up, now you get squeezed out of that trade because you got to pay back a more expensive yen.
So as you mentioned, you know, we said that this first yen intervention was early this month, and you said there's been more of this. I guess that leads to the question, is it working or is it too soon to tell? Because I actually saw something online from one analyst, Substack, who said that clearly this is not working. And it seems to me that, you know, this hasn't been given a whole lot of time to work yet. Is it too soon to tell?
To me, it's very much like shoveling in the snow. If you look at, you know, just pull up the yen and look at every time, you can see a clear candle down every time the Japanese or we intervene. And then what immediately happens? Well, math happens and it starts going slowly back up. And so I would agree with that person. Is what you're doing when you buy all the yen to strengthen it is you're just buying yourself time. And unless we can get the fundamentals fixed, which in Japan is going to be very difficult because they import pretty much everything like oil. And so as they get double whammy, right, as the yen weakens and oil goes up, they're getting crushed. Yeah. And that puts pressure on their currency.
Yeah.
And their rates.
Let me zoom out here and kind of put a bow on it with this, because it's really interesting. And I'm wondering, as we're talking about this, the currency market really is something that most of us don't pay much attention to. I mean, we'll look at where the stock market is going, where oil prices are going. You know, we see those tabulations of the dollar against the yen, the dollar against the British pound, the dollar against the euro, whatever it might happen to be. Most of us don't really pay that much attention to it. Should we be paying more attention to this?
You know, I will say that whenever I'm talking to clients, they're interested in talking about stocks, bonds, their eyes start to glaze over. By the time you're in currency, they've checked out.
Yeah.
But I would say, 4 things that I would tell people, if you're just going to pay attention to these 4 things. One was what we just talked about. How much are we intervening in the yen market? And then watch the correlation to tech. Private credit. So if you can't get a loan at a bank, you go to the private credit boys, and there's a lot of stress in that market. Jobs. You know, everybody talks about the Fed's mandate to keep inflation low, but they have a dual mandate. The other part of the mandate is to keep people employed.
Right.
And then lastly is the AI overbuild. I get to say I'm old enough to remember the tech boom, and I'm not saying that the NASDAQ goes down 85% like it did then, but I would say a lot of stuff that the Big 7 are doing is just round tripping. We're pulling sales forward and booking them now. Well, eventually you run out of sales to book forward.
Again, Titus Allen from AK Wealth Management with us this morning to talk about why all of this matters while we're paying attention to, understandably, the price that we're paying at the pump and everything that goes into that. There's a lot more going on out there that maybe we should be paying more attention to than we actually are. Titus, thanks very much for taking the time. Always appreciate your insight.
Thank you, sir.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are 2 separate and distinct groups. Breaking news, and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
In Nogales, Arizona, some very unusual costumes were denied entry into the United States last month at the southern border. Customs and Border Protection agents referred a traveler to a secondary inspection after they were discovered to be carrying agricultural items. Specialists at the border intercepted several homemade costumes made of chicken feet and unknown bird feathers contained in a large bag. Costumes made of chicken feet. Customs Border Protection says that there was a potential risk of foreign animal disease, so they turned the traveler and the costumes around and sent them back to Mexico. No word on where the traveler was headed or how the costumes were going to be used. Costumes made of chicken feet. I would imagine that's something you don't run into every day. All right. Elsewhere in the broken news, a 23-year-old traveler was arrested at Haneda Airport in Tokyo after customs officials there discovered approximately 200 lizards concealed inside 22 pairs of socks in his luggage. 200 lizards. Daniel Isaac Velasco Baltazar had arrived from South Korea when the reptiles were found. The haul included 9 Mexican alligator lizards, which is a protected endangered species subject to strict international trade regulations. Mr. Baltazar allegedly told investigators he had purchased the lizards in Mexico for about $4 a piece, while some species can sell in Japan for around $600 a piece. So obviously looking to turn a quick profit, but no, sorry, you can't just bring those in your socks. But one security employee said if there's a market for it, people will try to smuggle it. It happens more frequently than any of us would like. How would you like to discover later that you have been on the plane with 200 lizards? Well, good things those didn't get loose. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a couple in British Columbia who lost their home. You remember yesterday we had the story of the woman who had a heart attack and nearly died, ended up getting a parking fine because when she was taken to the hospital, her car was left in the parking lot too long. Okay, here's another story from a tone-deaf company. A couple in British Columbia who lost their home in a recent wildfire faced an unexpected battle with the cable company. Greg Brown and his wife evacuated on August 1st as the fire swept through their community near Okanagan Lake, British Columbia, destroyed their home. When his wife called to cancel their cable and internet, which of course they don't need because they don't have a phone anymore, they were told they would have to either pay a $660 disconnection fee or a $10 monthly fee to just suspend the account. Really? A $660 disconnection fee? After news reporters contacted the company after hearing about the story, they acknowledged that there was a waiver policy for just these kinds of situations, and the company apologized, waiving all of the cancellation and equipment fees. Because it's kind of hard to return the equipment, too, if it's been destroyed in a fire. But it's sad that it took, you know, news reporters to, you know, call their attention to it and all of the negative publicity to get them to own up to what they should have done in the first place. But, man. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Findlay Trojans play here on WFIN. This is Tim Montgomery. Join me and Coach Cliff Hite for all the action of Trojan football. You'll get every exciting play each Friday night, all season long, home and away.
This is Coach Stephen Adams. The Trojans open the season at home Friday night with Medina.
The Trojans play here on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And Now, your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. A really interesting survey here from Talker Research on the state of cheating in America. How committed are you? How faithful are you to your spouse or significant other? This survey of 2,000 Americans finds that cheating extends well beyond just physical acts. 41% of those in the survey consider ongoing flirtations ongoing flirtatious texting with someone other than your partner is being unfaithful. Ongoing flirtatious texting. And I would suggest that any flirting of any kind with someone of the opposite sex other than your partner would be an act of unfaithfulness. But 41% specifically were asked about texting. Maintaining a dating app profile just to look and keeping someone under a fake name, each ranked at 37%. I was actually surprised that isn't higher, you know? One in seven Americans in relationships admit to having romantic feelings for someone else. Gen Z most often at 31%, compared to just 9% of baby boomers. Having romantic feelings for someone else. Nearly a quarter of respondents in the survey said emotional intimacy without physical contact still counts as cheating. Emotional intimacy is still cheating. The survey found not just physical intimacy. The survey also found 32% believe that liking an ex's photos on social media crosses the line. And the more you do it, the more concerning this behavior is, liking an ex's photos on social media. Now, on the other hand, there are sometimes when people use odd excuses to get out of a relationship. All of these things will kill a relationship. But there are some things that are a little unusual. Some of the other unusual breakup reasons cited in the survey included a partner's pizza eating etiquette, bad haircuts, and pineapple topping disagreements, like pineapple on pizza. I understand that that can be, you know, a cause of conflict in a relationship, but a cause of ending a relationship? I don't know. Thinking you're looking at people who are just looking for an excuse to get out of a relationship in that case, right? Excitement starting to build for the kickoff of another high school football season. Tomorrow, we'll be on location taking the show on the road to Donnell Stadium. A kind of a game day sort of thing, right? Getting y'all ready for another year of gridiron action. A lot of special guests going to join us. Get you pumped for the Friday night lights. It will also be a very special evening tomorrow at Arlington High School as they open their football season at home at the new Doccaster Field at Joe Metzger Stadium, a fitting tribute to a Red Devil legend. And on yesterday evening's season opening Coach's Corner program, our John Marshall reflected on the coaching career and legacy of Joe Metzger.
A really spectacular event that is going on this week. The grand opening of Doccaster Field at Joe Metzger Stadium at Arlington. My broadcast partner, Don Masters.
I can remember going to Arlington and being intimidated just getting off the bus because you knew the history. And then when they walked out on the field, arm in arm, two by two, and they were so disciplined that they had 6 points just walking on the field.
Coach Metzger, a UPI number one ranking in both 76 and 79. He was the Northwest District Coach of the Year, 2 times BVC Coach of the Year, and now the opportunity to get his name on the new Arlington football stadium, and it is a fantastic place. A tribute to the man who really helped continue the tradition there at Arlington after Doc Caster.
Those two names go hand in hand with success at Arlington. But I think the tribute to Joe that I see is that the coaches that have come after him, they're running the same offense. They haven't changed. So he was doing something right. And the guys that have coached since him, they have continued the tradition.
Dick Leonard, one-time head coach at Arlington, a longtime assistant beginning in the early 80s, you saw firsthand what Joe Metzger was all about coach-wise and really as a person too, I would guess.
Yes, I sure did. It was nothing but a great experience. He was obviously a tremendous football coach, a tremendous motivator, very much attention to detail, but he truly loved the kids. And I still feel very blessed that I've been able to have him as a mentor and coached under him for many, many years. And it really did impact how I ran the program those years that I was the head coach.
Many people, lots of folks, of course, remember him as the Arlington football coach, but not nearly so many remember that he was also the girls basketball coach for 9 years and was pretty successful at that. And yep. 5 years as the boys track coach, too.
Yes, he loved athletics. He loved being with the student athletes. He loved teaching the game, attempting to get as much out of the players and the athletes, whether it be girls or boys, much as they could, you know, to reach close as they could get to that potential. He really stretched a lot of players and a lot of athletes throughout the years.
Doesn't matter whether it is somebody who played for him, who coached with him, or coached against him, everyone to a man says that was the kind of fella that you want to play against, play for, or be associated with in one way or another.
Absolutely. I have, as well as many, many people, but a tremendous amount of reverence for the man. I mean, he did things the right way. He didn't bend or break rules. He was an intense competitor, highly, highly detail-oriented. Everything he did with a purpose in mind, very thoughtful, like pre-thoughts and understanding, you know, who we're playing and what we're doing and where our deficiencies are and how to improve and or hide some of our deficiencies. And he was extremely, extremely good for him. I'll tell you, John, players would have ran through a brick wall for him coming out of games.
Chris Miller, sports director at WFIN from in the 80s right up until the late teens. I thought, who better than to tell us about Joe Metzger from the media point of view?
Yeah, John, as you know, our job's so much easier when the coaches are good guys and treat you well, and Joe Metzger would be right up there in all of those categories. You know, I have nothing but good things to say about Joe Metzger.
And after he stepped down the first time, he was a studio analyst for Channel 47, the local TV station that was there for a while.
When I first came to Findlay, the first school I ever went to was Arlington. When I got there, first person I met was this little dude in a letter sweater who said he was a coach. And we all know who the great Dave Featheringill is. You know, it was guys like Joe Metzger and Dave Rossman who just kind of took feathers under their wing, and now he's an absolute living legend. And I just, you know, appreciate those guys so much. As you know, most of the coaches I ever met from Arlington are like that.
And up next, we have Macomb football coach Chris Algie. We got a chance to talk to him last fall, just after they had announced that the stadium was going to be named in honor of Joe Metzger.
Yeah, that was awesome. I didn't even know anything about it, and I saw it. I know Doc Caster Field at Joe Metzger Stadium. Joe's just an awesome guy, awesome coach. I learned so much from him and a lot of respect, and that's a well-deserved honor, past due. So
I like to get into the little stories behind the football, because particularly in the Blanchard Valley Conference, it's all about how everybody gets along, and that has always been the case. Don Masters tells me that. He said, go back to the time I came here in 1980, and you know, all of the coaches knew each other, and maybe not as much now right. as it once was, but I think that is something that's special about the Blanchard Valley County.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's something in the past with Banning and Metzger. I still remember Banning and Metzger in the shower, you know, hitting on a cigarette and sharing a cigarette in the shower back then. That's what they did. But, you know, and Don Masters and Coach Banning talking, and Spike Berry, and, you know, the things they did with Feather and Gill, and Feathers is still around, but you know, I can remember Joe would send Feathers over to Spike, and Spike would send them back, and Yeah, there's a lot of behind the scenes, a lot of stories, and that's part of coaching that, you know, you're there every day in the grind, but there's also some laughs and some memories that you hold on to.
Friday night to be recognized with the naming of the brand new stadium, Doncaster Field at Joe Metzger Stadium, to open as Arlington meets Elgin.
A fitting tribute indeed. Going to be a very special night for the Red Devils tomorrow. They open up that brand new stadium. And again, audio from last night's season opening Coach's Corner program, which can be heard each Wednesday evening through the football and basketball seasons on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM. If you go to the Sports Audio Archive on our webpage, you can hear the complete tribute to Joe Metzger and reflections on his coaching career and his legacy. We certainly wish the Red Devils the best of luck on this inaugural season. They're the new Doncaster Field at Joe Metzger Stadium. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform when you get an opportunity to do so. That will help others discover the show as well, and we thank you very much for that. Coming up tomorrow on the program, this is going to be a lot of fun. We will be on location at Donnell Stadium for the kickoff of another high school football season. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.